It's time, Fort Wayne. Your sports, your station. It's the Sports Rush with Brett Rump. Covering all the topics that hit a nerve here in the Summit City.
Clark, 11-yard touchdown!
Only on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Now here's your host, Brett Rump.
The greatest, most interesting, most important person of all time.
You are incredible!
Well, listen to me, I'm older and I'm wise.
Yeah, well, you're half right.
What is this, amateur hour?
This is gonna be huge.
I believe this is gonna be our finest hour.
Just when I think you said the stupidest thing ever, you keep talking.
I think that's the worst thing I've ever heard.
That boy ain't right.
The simplest way to put it, I have problems.
Welcome to the alleged show.
Time to head on home, feel a little bit in the Christmas spirit today. If we had a top 10 of all-time Christmas songs, I know there's people that like the classics, but I'm telling you, it is hard to beat Mariah Carey, All I Want for Christmas Is You. Hey, welcome to the Sports Rush. It is your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump, along with Adam Lundy in the producer's chair. Adam, I know you're a different generation than I am, but number one all-time among best Christmas songs ever, Mariah?
Oh, yeah, it's up there. It's up there.
Up there. Now, I said number one.
Number one, though? Oh, man. See, mine's a little silly. It's a little...
Well, I saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus or something. What when you say silly, it's not Frosty the Snowman.
It's The Little Saint Nick by the Beach Boys.
Oh, really?
The Little Saint Nick. Yeah. I like it. Yeah. I love it. I just love the harmonies. Really? I'm a big...
that's the Beach Boys. Are you a Beach Boys fan?
Yeah. I love Pet Sounds.
Really?
Good stuff.
There you go. Number one all time. What is your favorite? You can let us know on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. Big show today coming up. We've got Kevin Bowen from 93.5-107.5, The Fan down in Indianapolis. We'll talk Indianapolis Colts. And big news today out of Tennessee. We'll talk about that. Also, the judge, Phil Hauk, is going to join us in hour number two. We'll have to get caught up on Notre Dame football. Who's leaving, who might be coming, who could be possibly joining the Irish. They're going to be looking for a quarterback, and it looks like there's plenty of options that are now filling the transfer portal. We'll have to talk about the transfer portal a little bit, too, because that's become quite the story right now in college football. Is almost every minute, if you refresh Twitter, you're going to find somebody new that has entered the transfer portal with their thank yous to their colleges, universities, and coaches, and You know, it's basically all these graceful getaways. They're just out of town, you know, on my way to the next. I'm available. NIL deals, please let me know what's out there. I mean, I don't know. Is it the loosening up of the transfer rules? Is it the NIL? What is it that's got everybody looking for greener pastures? Because it's gotten pretty excessive, I would think.
Well, I think it's a combination of everything. Yeah, you know, you got the NIL deals now that you can maybe find a more lucrative NIL offer at another school, and you can transfer to it more easily now. So.
Yeah, and not sit out. You can transfer. Yeah. You can transfer mid-season. It's crazy.
It's an interesting time in college sports, most definitely.
You can basically rebuild your entire roster off the transfer portal.
Yeah, and we've seen teams do that.
And IU is going to be doing that.
They will have to do that, yes.
They've lost most of their players to the transfer portal. But yeah, Kevin Bowen and the judge, Phil Hauk, joining the program today. Earlier today, this was kind of breaking news that the Tennessee Titans, after getting torched by former wide receiver A.J. Brown, who now plays for the Philadelphia Eagles, they fired their general manager.
Yeah.
Now, the general manager is obviously the one that allowed A.J. Brown to end up in Philadelphia. And apparently, local media was kind of blasting him for that decision after A.J. Brown scored a couple of touchdowns against his former team. And the Philadelphia Eagles kind of smoked the Tennessee Titans 35-10. And just a couple of days later, the general manager, John Robinson, who less than a year ago just signed a contract extension. He is fired by the Tennessee Titans. This sends a message throughout the organization that we have high standards. We expect top performance, and maybe this wasn't an example of good decision making, and it's costing us perhaps one game. They've lost two in a row now after losing to the Bengals 20-16, and then following that up with a loss to Philly 35-10. They don't have much of an offense. They're a little bit like the Colts, except better. But, you know, they don't have an explosive, high-powered offense. They're built mostly on defense. They try to basically stay in games and not beat themselves and hope they've got opportunities to win in the fourth quarter. And they go back-to-back losses and the general manager gone. Now, I don't know what to make of this because the timing is very unusual. The fact that it did come with the season still 4 weeks left. The fact that that it comes after back-to-back losses, especially the loss against the Philadelphia Eagles with A.J. Brown scoring two touchdowns. That was pretty high profile, and it was a big focus in the media down in Nashville. I don't know what exactly it means, but I did see Stephen Holder saying that he kind of smelled something here. It's like, okay, what are you sensing? What does this mean to you? What do you think it could mean? Does it mean there's another general manager that they've got their eyes on? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, what do you get out of this?
Overall, most of the moves he made have not been horrible moves. They don't have depth. They have lost a lot of wide receivers in the last couple of years. Maybe that's a bit of a concern. And it's kind of exaggerated when one of those former wide receivers comes back and beats you almost single-handedly. But John Robinson is out in Tennessee. And it also makes you think perhaps that's the problem we've got with the Indianapolis Colts is we are not real definitive in going right after the top.
Yeah, that might be the issue.
All different layers below. Chris Ballard, head coach, offensive coordinator, quarterback. I mean, you can go right through all the different levels. There have been people that have lost their jobs. But Chris Ballard, the architect of putting this team together, which obviously has its flaws, is still in his position. And it's almost like, isn't it ironic that the team that actually wins the division consistently over the Colts and right now is ahead of the Colts in the standings doesn't stand more than a couple of weeks for back-to-back losses, and the general manager is gone. Now, maybe there's another story. Maybe there's something that we don't know. Maybe it's, you know, one of those inner office stories that we've heard, and I'm not trying to make accusations. I'm just saying, you know, there could be more to this than just wins and losses. But Tennessee does fire their general manager today.
Yeah, like you said, it's just kind of the complete opposite of what the Colts have been doing with their struggles in their organization, going from kind of the bottom up. The Titans start right at the top.
Should Chris Ballard be fired? I guess that's the question. I've never come up with a definitive opinion on this.
Right.
I mean, because one of the things about firing a head coach or firing a general manager is what's your alternative? How do you get an upgrade from the one you have? I think Chris Ballard has made some very big and bold mistakes. And he was somewhat brash in the way he approached this season when he was asked about wide receivers, when he was asked about tight ends. But if you look, I mean, top draft picks that he made. Okay, Quentin Nelson. He ends up not only drafting him, but he also overpays him because Quentin Nelson has not been the best offensive lineman in the league this year. Shaquille Leonard. He's been injured. He's not been an impact player at all this season for the Indianapolis Colts. And then you've got Ryan Kelly, who is playing like he's 35, 36, 37 years old. Braden Smith now out injured. But the point is, you've got a lot of things you could pin on Chris Ballard for where the Colts are at. Quarterback position has never really fully addressed it. He's tried to find Band-Aids and find Band-Aids that fit real well and stop the bleeding, But the only problem is those Band-Aids, they get saturated. You know, it's kind of like, well, they last for a little while, but they're really not the solution. They're not long-term. We've seen it with how many quarterbacks now?
Yeah.
Four different quarterbacks since Andrew Luck has retired, with Jacoby Brissett, Phillip Rivers, Carson Wentz, Matt Ryan. I guess you could probably say five, because you could probably add Sam Ellinger, who got his chance a couple of weeks. And then once they hired Jeff Saturday to come in and coach, then Sam Ellinger went back to his backup role, and Matt Ryan was elevated to the starting job. But now it's not going to be Matt Ryan. I can't imagine they'll stick with Matt Ryan. After what we've seen, he's not winning football games. He doesn't provide any mobility in the pocket. And I really, honestly, I thought Matt Ryan could move a little more than what he's shown us. And this football team is soft. There's no doubt about it. It's soft. I mean, once there was adversity in the game against Dallas, the Colts crumbled. And that's when you really find out the character of your football team is, how do they respond to adverse situations? Oh, yeah, being down 14 points in the first quarter. That's not really an adverse situation. Adverse situations when you make mistakes, you got to pick your teammates up. And you're in desperation mode where you feel like you've got to win. You have to win. And that's what the Colts went into. And when the everything started to crumble on Sunday night, the Colts crumbled right along with it. They were soft. In fact, the whole football team seems like a soft football team. There's not a lot of leadership, a lot of character, and it was a pretty embarrassing loss. But Tennessee is 30-15 since 2019. They've won two out of every three games. That's a heck of a winning percentage in the NFL.
Yeah.
And yet, after winning the division, what they have, 11-12 wins or something like that over the last two seasons, after winning the division back-to-back and well on their way to the third straight AFC South title, their general manager, John Robinson, gone.
Yeah, we got a text on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. They said, maybe Mike Vrabel went to the owner and said, it's either the GM or me.
I don't know.
Maybe.
I mean, you could come up with a lot of speculation.
Sure.
In a situation like this, because general managers generally don't lose their, because there's not a lot of general managing to do right now.
Yeah.
For the next 4 weeks.
It seems like more of an off-season thing to do.
Well, it would be at the end of the season, because like right now, you're just basically managing the staff. That's it. You're just kind of supervising, managing the staff, make sure everybody shows up, everything goes along without a hitch. But you're not doing a lot of, I mean, I guess it is a scouting season somewhat, because you are scouting future potential draft picks, but you've got a scouting department that's doing the real heavy lifting here. But I don't know. It's an odd situation happening down in Tennessee as John Robinson gets fired. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. How about those Pacers last night?
Yeah, huh? Man.
Late night game, so a lot of people probably didn't have a chance to stay up and see it, but they should have, because the Pacers went to Golden State just after yesterday's show, when I said how the Pacers all of a sudden are falling on their face, getting beat by 20-some points every game.
They were listening.
What happens? Yeah, apparently they were listening. But what happens last night? You sit Miles Turner, Tyrese Halliburton's out. Who else was? Somebody else was out. They had like three starters out of the starting lineup.
Yeah, it was
and
a lot.
The Pacers go on to beat Golden State. Who other than Andrew Wiggins, they were healthy.
Draymond did play.
Played.
Yep. So.
And you've got the Splash Brothers. Both of them were playing.
Oh, there.
But I will say this, the Pacers did one heck of a job defending Steph Curry last night.
Yeah.
And held him to 3 of 17 shooting. They made it tough on him. 2 of 10 from three. He only had 12 points. That was a big difference.
Yeah.
I mean, it gave the Pacers an opportunity to fight off a couple of big rallies by Golden State, one late in the first half, one in the second half. And the Pacers end up pulling away late and beating the Golden State Warriors 112-104. Andrew Nembhard.
Wow.
I mean, man, you've got to start to feel a little excited about this core. And you know, we can bash Chris Ballard, but you got to give credit to Kevin Pritchard, because this, you know, we were about to send him out packing, right?
Yeah, no kidding.
And all of a sudden now you've got to start wondering, hey, maybe they're onto something here. because they get Halliburton in that deal last year.
Yeah.
You draft Mathurin. You pick up Andrew Nembhard, second round. Can you imagine the number of teams that right now are kicking themselves for not drafting this guy? Especially when you hear like Coach Carlisle saying in a press conference that if they do the redraft where they go after the year and they go back and redo the previous year's draft, that he says right now he thinks Nembhard's top 15, maybe a top 10 pick. If you go back and compare him to the other players, they picked him in the second round. He ends up with 31 points, 13 assists, 8 rebounds, did the majority of the defensive work on Steph Curry, 13 of 21 from the field, 5 of 7 from 3.
Just a really impressive all-around performance. I mean, the 31 points, the 13 assists really sticks out to me, too, really getting that ball moving.
And so much balance with Pacers. Jalen Smith, 15 points, 9 rebounds. Buddy Hield, 17 points, 9 rebounds. 6 different Pacers scoring double figures. So the Pacers get a big win. Now they've got the finale of this 7-game road trip, their longest of the season, coming up in Minnesota. And then they'll finally return home on Friday. Tomorrow night, it's Minnesota. And then Friday, finally, back at home. All right, let's get caught up with what's happening in the world of sports. Today's top headlines with Adam Lundy.
All right, well, this just came in not too long ago. The Dallas Cowboys have concerns after Odell Beckham Jr.'s physical that his recovery from a torn left ACL has not progressed enough to ensure he would play before mid-January, and there is a possibility that signing him would have no benefit until the 2023 season.
Does he have to give back the tickets that he got last night, front row tickets, to go to the Dallas Mavericks game?
He might. There is now another trophy for NBA teams to chase. The league announced Tuesday that the team with the best regular season record will now receive the Maurice Podoloff Trophy, named for the first commissioner of the NBA. The Colorado Buffaloes are...
Probably the NFL.
What?
Was that the first commissioner of the NBA?
Yes.
So that's the trophy for the best record in the NBA?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. I was confused.
It's all good. So, Deion Sanders joins Colorado, but now the Colorado Buffaloes are hiring Kent State head coach Sean Lewis to join the head coach Deion Sanders as the team's offensive coordinator. And the first ever MLB draft lottery is set to take place at the winter meetings tonight and will determine the top 6 picks in the MLB draft.
Smart hire by Deion Sanders, because nothing will help him more than by hiring a guy that you don't think is a threat to take your job, but has head coaching experience.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that works out well for Deion Sanders. 46862, the Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. Coming up next, we're going to be talking to Kevin Bowen, 93.5 107.5, the Fan down in Indianapolis. Plenty to talk to him about, including this story about Tennessee firing John Robinson. What about the Jim Harbaugh rumors? And so much more. We've got KB joining us after the break. Coming up at hour number two today, we do have the Judge Phil Hauk, host of Fighting Irish Preview, to talk about Notre Dame, who's out, who might be in, and look forward to their bowl game coming up against South Carolina. We'll talk to the judge coming up at 5:20. Right now, joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline from 93.5 107.5, the Fan down in Indianapolis, it is Kevin Bowen. Good afternoon, KB.
Hey, Brett. How you doing?
Doing well. So many different things to talk about. I don't know which angle to begin with, but I'm just going to throw out there the most recent news. It involves the AFC South. Tennessee has fired their general manager, John Robinson. This is a little bit of a surprise. I would guess that you're surprised as well. It's hard to believe that this is all over the A.J. Brown performance against the Titans on Sunday.
Yeah, you hate to kind of go down this path, but I'll just be upfront with you. There's got to be more to the story. Teams typically don't fire general managers during a season. That's much more of a head coach thing than the GM thing. Good teams do not fire their GMs during the season, particularly in early December. Like, what are you getting done from a roster standpoint in the last month and a half of the season? You know, very little. It's not like you're making wholesale changes to your roster. If anything, you're just creating a headline and a little bit of questions about the organization and those sorts of things. So, very confused by it. Obviously, in the short term, gives Mike Vrabel a whole lot of personnel control as well. And you would think in the long term, considering the coaching success that he's had there, that he would continue to maybe rise in that side of it. I also think that when you look at Tennessee's roster, in a way, I mean, they haven't been built, I think, in the way that a lot of modern teams have been built. So maybe that is playing something into it. You brought up the A.J. Brown situation. Sure, but I was just shocked to see a division leader in early December make a move like this.
In December, when you talk about general managers' roles, how big a month is this for scouting, for projecting who you might want to draft? Because it is bowl season. But the only problem is a lot of the guys that are going to go to the draft, they're opting out of their bowls. But how big is the next month, other than just kind of administrating the office and getting through to the end of the season? What are roles for general managers generally at this time?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'll also point out one more thing on the Robinson front. They extended him in February.
Yeah.
So, you know, to extend him in February, now make this move in December, just kind of adds to the confusion to it all. You know, how the Colts typically operate in December from a personnel standpoint is this is the first time that Chris Ballard will bring all of his area scouts in from across the United States who are, you know, been watching college football in person for the last 4 months and bring them into the building, and they will get their first look as a group of watching all of the draft eligible prospects. Now, of course, you don't know exactly who all is going to declare for the draft, that eligibility, or the declaration, I think, is sometime in early 2023 to declare for the draft. And like you said, some guys will still play in bowl games, but you have seen an entire college football season for a lot of these guys, and you can date back to, you know, prior years with their film. But this is like the early setting of the, all right, who do we like? Who do we not like? Who fits our system? Those sorts of things. Of course, the Colts, it's a little bit more complicated because you've got some serious questions organizationally about where you're going, not only personnel-wise, but from a coaching standpoint, what systems, you know, could be implemented, things like that. So this is kind of the first look, and it's usually a, you know, multi-week process. They grind away and spend a lot of time in those rooms watching each and every prospect and, you know, want to have some very heated discussions and, you know, call out people that they don't feel like it's a totally accurate assessment of a player or if there's different opinions. Try and get that settled, and that's kind of the first layer. We'll probably do that, I think, three different times throughout the next 5 months until the draft.
Kevin, I know, well, you're old enough to remember the day. I obviously am, where when a name came up associated with a head coaching job, that usually meant that an agent wanted that out there or that a reporter uncovered something. Now you can simply just post something on Twitter and it can spread as if it's fact. And so you've got the Jim Harbaugh name being connected to the Colts. How much of this is real? How much is fantasy? How much of it is just social media? What do you believe about the chances of Jim Harbaugh becoming the next Colts head coach?
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring that up. We had Bob Kravitz on our show this morning, and Bob was, you know, he didn't write after the Cowboys game. His story after the Cowboys-Colts game was about Jim Harbaugh and how the Colts should pursue Jim. And I feel like I know Bob and his reporting style pretty well, and I thought to myself, you know, Bob wouldn't do that if he didn't have any little inkling. And so the first question I asked him today on the show wasn't necessarily about Harbaugh. It was, you know, did you write this because of a whisper you're hearing on one side or the other? And he made it very clear to us, no, this was his opinion as a columnist is saying, this is what I think the Colts should do. So I know there's been other national people that have mentioned Harbaugh and the Colts. I do think some of that is simply like connecting rather obvious dots of, you know, he is a Ring of Honor player in this organization. He has Midwest ties. He obviously, him and Jim Irsay work closely together. And so I think some of that is there. You know, at the same time, you know, how much do we believe Harbaugh at his word? He was pretty adamant last year when things fell apart with the Vikings that he would not continue to do this on an annual basis. And I think him and Ward Manuel, the Michigan AD, had some sort of agreement that, again, this wouldn't become an annual thing. You know, and then he said what he said on a conference call earlier this week after the Fiesta Bowl announcement came, of saying that I am going to coach at Michigan in 2023. Now, you can find plenty of times where coaches said that, and then, you know, days or, hell, hours later, they go back on their word there. Do I think the Colts would have interest in Jim Harbaugh? Yes. Are there questions to be answered, though, about that becoming like a finality? Yes. I think there are several questions. You know, I think somebody got to acknowledge, and I remember having this conversation with you, Brett, back when Frank Reich was fired midseason. Jim Irsay's actions in meddling as much as he has this season, that will scare away some coaching candidates.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a level of, there's only 32 of these, and not everyone has the resume of a Jim Harbaugh. But Sean Payton's got the resume of a Jim Harbaugh. And I think when Sean Payton a few weeks ago described some openings around the NFL having a dysfunctional, you know, franchise around them, I would be willing to bet he would probably put the Colts there. And when you consider that and you consider no quarterback, and you might not get the pick of the litter quarterback-wise like you could in Houston if they fire Lovie Smith, that, I think, causes some reservations about this opening that could scare some people away. So I just think those are things you have to acknowledge. Having said all that, you're willing to pay top dollar, and you're willing to give Jim Harbaugh a lot of control, and he still has that NFL urge, who knows? Maybe he would leave Michigan.
Four games into the Jeff Saturday audition, what kind of a grade do you give him?
Oh, man, that's a good one. You know, I think you have to throw in the caveat of, like, it is a little bit of him walking into a test without, you know, proper study materials. Like, he just doesn't have the same sort of preparation that others in the class had. This is how I kind of look at it. I guess I'll throw a letter grade in at the end for you. They've gotten off to great starts. There's no question about that. And they did not do that under Frank Reich. And for a team that was reeling, you know, I think just generally with their record, and then having the latest bye week in the NFL, like, I was curious, would we see this team just kind of throw in the towel? Now, certainly you point to the fourth quarter on Monday night, and you could say that. But they got off to a great start on Monday.
I mean, that would have been the only thing that was thrown in that game on Friday, by the way, was the white towel.
Yeah, that's very good on you for that one.
Thank you.
Yeah, there was obviously not a whole lot to like. Hopefully you went to bed at the end of the third quarter, to be honest. But they have gotten off to better starts. I think the offensive line play has gotten slightly better. Granted, the bar was not very high. But at the end of the day, it's still a team that just stinks on offense. They can't score. They certainly can't finish games. That's been an issue probably under Saturday. They've gotten off to good starts, but they really struggle in the fourth quarter outside of the Raiders game. You know, Steelers, Eagles, and certainly the Cowboys would all fall into that category. So C-plus, I don't know. I mean, some of the in-game decisions, didn't love the game management late in the Steelers game. Didn't love some of his answers, to be honest with you,
mm-hmm.
earlier this week. You know, asked about Jelani Woods and the playing time, and he pretty much said, well, flow of the game. I mean, Jelani Woods is one of your best players in the field against Pittsburgh, and then he doesn't play until you empty the bench in the fourth quarter. Then the Matt Ryan answer about his shoulder and that, you know, I don't talk to guys about their injuries. Well, I mean, it's your quarterback, and the velocity looks awful. If he was hurt, I think that would be a conversation that you'd want to have. So, you know, haven't loved some of that stuff. But I do think if you talk to people, there is an uptick in accountability, and there's, you know, more one-on-one nature to practices and things like that. I just think so much of this is rooted in personnel problems more than coaching.
How do you rebuild the offense? I mean, obviously the offense has been an issue really since week one. The Colts just cannot score 20 points or more. I mean, they're 3-0-1 when they do, but it's kind of fitting they didn't get the two-point conversion against Dallas because that kept them at 19 and kept the record intact. But how do you fix it? You don't have an offensive coordinator. Head coach, not a lot of offensive play design experience. I mean, do you just have to roll with what you've got in the current playbook and hope you pick the right play at the right time?
Yeah, I think it's pretty difficult to fix it this season. I mean, you're 13 games into it. I think this is the offense that you have. I do think the run game lacks a bit of creativity. I thought Dallas really hurt you on some of the perimeter stuff on Sunday night. The Colts can't really, or haven't really, I should say, tapped into that. It seems like the only success the Colts have offensively comes really off a product of tempo. We saw that implemented a little bit on Sunday night. And then, you know, when you're able to take a shot to Pierce, that appears to be the only real constant, you know, vertical passing game-wise. Michael Pittman was really, really shut down in that game. So, again, it goes back to the earlier point, Brad, of I just think so much of this is personnel-driven. And you can point to a variety of positions offensively that are hurting you. I mean, turnovers as a whole is a huge, huge issue. But I just don't think you have upper echelon talent at really any offensive position. I mean, I would still think Jonathan Taylor is, you know, whatever, top five running back in the NFL. But outside of that, I mean, I wouldn't call your tight end group top half. Your wideout, you know, wideout group probably had a few more moments than I thought they would, but still, they're not better than a, you know, top 15 unit in the league. Obviously, the offensive line hasn't played there, and your quarterback stinks. So when you add up all that, it's really no surprise that the offense is where it's at from a scoring standpoint.
I want to ask you the same question I asked yesterday, which was, Jeff Saturday refused to throw the flag, and I didn't like the excuse he gave that he was told upstairs and by the referee it definitely hit the ground, because all the replays I saw, and I don't know if you saw anything different, that's why I'm bringing this up, none of the replays I saw were definitive that it hit the ground. I think the decision was, do you have enough to overturn it and call it a catch or an interception? But Jeff Saturday, to me, has to back his player, who seemed very convincing that he intercepted it. And I think at that moment, you've got to back the player. Did you sense that he lost a little bit from the locker room, so to speak, mid-game? Because it seemed to me like the Colts quit after that. They had nothing left.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. I would like to think the locker room, you know, wouldn't react that quickly to such a decision. I don't know if Isaiah Rodgers is running up and down the sideline telling everybody and their mother that Jeff, you know, should have challenged it. Let's you know, quit on him or something like that. I'm with you. I didn't think it's a call that should have been challenged. I didn't see any great angles on it. And obviously the call in the field was not an interception, so it would have taken some evidence to overturn it. But the catch-no-catch rule, I feel like I swing and miss on 80% of the time when they go to the booth and they actually make a challenge on it. So who knows? Maybe they would have missed on that. And it just had the feeling to me of like, that was your one chance to really, really make this a game. Like at that point, Dallas looked like they were going to go in for another score, stretch the lead back to two scores, and you're going to be back kind of in that, can you keep up with them? And you just aren't potent enough to do that. And so that's why I would have thrown the flag there, just because I feel like it was your best chance, albeit not a great chance. It was your best chance to try and make a game-changing play.
Always appreciate you jumping on, Kevin. I know we're out of time, but look forward to talking to you again soon.
Of course. You guys have a great week.
Yep, you too. That is Kevin Bowen, 93.5, 107.5, the Fan down in Indianapolis, joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. And, of course, you can always join us, 46862, the Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862.
You know when you're doing top stories and then another one breaks right after?
Oh, you got another big breaking story?
Baker Mayfield was claimed off waivers by the Los Angeles Rams.
Oh.
Yeah.
Not terribly surprised by that.
No, they needed somebody with Matthew Stafford out.
Yeah, and he kind of fits in a little bit, I think, with the Sean McVay system.
Yeah, so just figured I'd throw that one out there.
Yeah, better than what they had. So, yeah, we'll see where it takes. I mean, obviously, Baker wanted out for this type of opportunity. He wanted to get someplace where somebody needed a quarterback and he would have the opportunity to play. I don't know if it was because of what happened in San Francisco.
Yeah, and then I also saw, for what it's worth, the Niners did not put in a waiver claim for him. So they did not
attempt to get him. They did not make a move. In fact, they said that they had discussed it and decided that they were better off with the options that they had. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. We'll take a break. In fact, speaking of the quarterbacks, another historic performance last night. And whether you love him or hate him, he still is proving to be the all-time greatest that's ever played the position in the NFL. Of course, I'm talking about, I don't know, it's hard for me to say the name, you know, really as a Colts fan. But we'll tell you what happened last night when we come back. It is the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
This is Chris Denary from the Indiana Pacers on Fox Sports Indiana, and you're listening to the Sports Rush with Brett Rump on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
The Judge Phil Hauk to talk Notre Dame football. Of course, you hear him as the host of Fighting Irish Preview here at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. He's going to join the show coming up at 5:20. First, we'll talk about the departure of Drew Pine and how much of a surprise that is to someone who covers Notre Dame on a regular basis. But we'll also talk about what's next. Is Tyler Buchner going to be the future face at quarterback for Notre Dame? Is Notre Dame going to have somebody that comes in and takes over out of the transfer portal? And if so, who does the judge have his eye on as a possible replacement at the quarterback position? We'll get to the bottom of it all with the Judge Phil Hauk joining us a little over 30 minutes from now.
We'll pass judgment.
Oh, that's a good one.
You like
See,
that?
I don't know if Kevin fully understood when he said they were throwing in the white towel or something in the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And I said that's the only thing they were throwing, because I was referring to the lack of throwing the red handkerchief. And I don't know if, you know, I might have. I tried to jump in. It was like one of those one-liners that you got that opportunity there to just kind of jump in and. And I don't know if it really played very well. I lost the room when I tried to jump in there.
Mine was better.
Okay. Well, okay. Congratulations. You win today's comedy off.
Woo!
Yeah. Go home. Tell mama.
I will.
I won the comedy bested rump on one. 46862, the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Oh, also, playing some Christmas music. Of course, we started the show with Mariah Carey, All I Want for Christmas Is You. I voted Mariah Carey all-time Christmas best. You said Beach Boys.
Yeah, the Little Saint Nick.
Little Saint Nick.
Little Saint Nick.
Okay, you're now saying me too. So now you're two for two on the show today. Reaching those high parts of the Beach Boys. So what is your favorite all-time Christmas classic? Let us know. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. I know last night you were not watching Monday Night Football.
No, I was at the...
you might have caught up with the fourth quarter.
So. Yeah, I got home and it was. I actually did get to see the ending there, which was really exciting. But
watching the Mad Ants last night.
Was at the Mad Ants, yeah.
Big performance. We'll talk about that, at least what we know of it. Adam, you know more than me, because I didn't get an invite. You did.
I invited you, Brett. I don't want to hear that.
Oh, okay. You did invite me. Okay. It's pretty bad, though, when I got to get my invite, like, through a third-party vendor. you had quite the experience at the Coliseum last night, too.
Yeah, I did. Did get stuck in the elevator.
Stuck in the elevator.
That was quite the experience.
So you got in the elevator.
Yeah.
Pushed the button.
Nothing happened. Door wouldn't open.
Yeah, the door closed.
Door closed.
Elevator didn't move.
Nothing moved.
And nothing would open.
Nothing opened.
And you pushed all the buttons trying like heck to get out of that elevator.
Yeah, I was seeing how long I could go without having to press the fire department button that they have in there.
Yeah,
the SOS.
The emergency.
But someone ended up calling it to another floor.
Well, you want to remain calm because you use less oxygen.
So, yeah.
Don't run low on the oxygen in there. But
And
so the strange thing you said was, while you were stuck and you were in there and you were pushing all the different floors, you couldn't get it to go anywhere.
No.
But someone walks up to the elevator at floor number one or the basement, and unbeknownst to them, they're basically hitting the button to get the elevator, while you're in it, not hitting a button, all of a sudden takes off.
Yeah, it starts going down.
Starts going down. You don't know where you're going.
It was not the most fun experience I've had. I'll tell you that much.
It's like you're going for a ride. You don't know who's controlling this ship.
Yeah, and then when it goes down, it went down into like the basement level, I think. So I lost cell phone service too.
But the door opened.
No, it didn't open. It didn't open on the bottom levels. Then someone called it up to the 100 level.
So now you're stuck in the basement.
Yeah, that was
no cell service.
A couple minutes down there. Then someone called it up to the 100 level, and it opened there.
Visions of the Memorial Coliseum staff finding you.
Yeah, just dead on the...
Adam Lundy. 12, 5, 22.
Oh, that would have been rough.
Yeah, I know. I'd had to find a producer for today.
Oh, man.
It would have been tough. But then you went up to the first floor, and then it opened.
Yeah, the door did open at the 100 level.
And you, like, bust out of there.
Oh, yeah. And I told the guy at the door to not go in it. Don't go in there, man, because I was just stuck. We got two texts on the text line, 46862, weighing in with their favorite Christmas songs. We've got a vote for Little Drummer Boy. And we've got to vote for Andy Williams' Most Wonderful Time of the Year. That's a good one.
Wow, that is a classic. Yeah. When we say classics.
Absolutely.
When I was a kid, and this dates me, Andy Williams used to have one of the annual Christmas specials. You know, when you grow up and every year you have a certain list of Christmas specials, Andy Williams used to have one. Of course, I watched... What did you watch when you were a kid? Because I watched Frosty.
Oh, I watched the same.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Yeah.
They're still
watch.
They're still annual classics.
Charlie Brown.
Yeah, I was never big on the Charlie Brown Christmas.
Oh, I'm a big Charlie Brown.
So Andy Williams, and the other one was Little Drummer Boy.
Little Drummer Boy, and we just got another one. They said they're going with I'll Be Home for Christmas by Michael Bublé. They're going with the Bublé version.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, that's a more modern cover of it, but if you like it, you'll like it.
46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. So last night, you had a chance to see the finish to the game.
Yeah.
I mean, that was an awful night for Tom Brady.
Yeah.
He missed some receivers.
Yeah.
They had guys that didn't get open. The pressure was closing in on the pocket on Brady, and it just seemed like, once again, the New Orleans Saints are going to own Tom Brady, shut him down. And then there was a moment in the fourth quarter with about 8 minutes left. And I think the Bucs were somewhere around the 35-yard line, roughly, right? Their own 35. And it was fourth down, and I believe about fourth and five. Now, I know somebody's going to say, it was fourth and four. But it was not like a fourth and one play, right?
No.
Tom Brady refused to come off the field. He waved the special teams, the punt unit, back to the sideline, and he was going to stay on the field. And eventually we ended up that Todd Bowles won out, and he eventually did send the punt unit out on the field, and Brady had no choice but to go to the sideline. But clearly, at that moment, he was not in favor of that decision. He wanted to go for it.
Right.
Now, if he didn't get it, you would have been giving basically the game away. But a lot of things then at that moment had to go right for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to get two possessions to come back, because they were down, 16-6 at that point. And so a lot of things had to go right for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, down by two scores. It was 16-7. But anyway, they punt the ball away, and then New Orleans inexplicably they get the ball, and instead of going or staying in bounds, they had like two plays where they went out of bounds. They stopped the clock and allowed Tampa Bay valuable extra seconds in that fourth quarter to not only get the two possessions that they needed, but to have time to not only score once to take the lead at the end of the game, but there was a penalty. They got marched back for a hold, a 10-yard march off, and Tom Brady still got them in the end zone with 3 seconds left. What drama.
Yeah.
Did you know that last night was the latest in a game that Tom Brady threw a go-ahead touchdown pass to win a football game?
That's surprising considering how many games he's played.
He's,
but yeah.
He's been around. He's been around since Len Dawson back in the 60s. For as many years as he has played, as many games as he has played, mm-hmm. as many comebacks as he has orchestrated, it was hard to believe that was the latest, that he never had like a final play, no time on the clock type of situation. But 3 seconds left, latest in a game that he'd ever thrown, the go-ahead touchdown pass. And, Tampa Bay radio, we have the call of what it sounded like when Tom Brady got the lead for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Brady going to work, trying to secure it. 44th. come from behind one in the fourth quarter. Rashad White, the running back. Here's the snap. Brady dropping, looking. Brady throws. Caught ball. It's caught. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. Rashad White. Rashad White. Touchdown, Buccaneers. Fire the cannons. Bucs tie the game at 16. Brady with a dart. And Rashad White finishes.
All right. Fire the cannons. Fire the cannons.
I like that.
I don't want to make fun of a play-by-play guy.
No. That was a very enthusiastic and
very enthusiastic. He is Gene Deckerhoff, who has done Tampa Bay radio for
at least 35 years.
Yeah, 30 some years.
Like mid-80s. Yeah. So
long time. So he had the call last night with Tom Brady getting the win for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We got to take a timeout. Next hour is going to be a big one. Mad Ants, NCAA, do they have to get involved and do something to put some kind of a stop or halt or filter on this transfer portal situation? I mean, hardly a minute goes by that you don't find somebody else who's decided that they're going to go explore their options and enter the transfer portal. Plus, we've got Tuesday Time Capsule Trivia. You know what that means? Today, it's a special prize pack. Not only do we have the large pizza from Pizza Hut, but tickets to the Comets game. We got two, right? Two tickets? Two tickets. Is this to Saturday night's game?
I believe so. I will double check.
Well, we've got two tickets.
Yep, Saturday's game versus the Cincinnati Cyclones.
There we go. So we've got two tickets to give away to the Comets and a large pizza to Pizza Hut if you are our contestant today on Tuesday Time Capsule Trivia. And Joe, no calling. You've done this too often. And you've beaten me like 4 out of 5. At least in Joe's mind, he's beaten me 4 out of 5. I don't know. We haven't audited that yet. But Joe's claim is that he's beaten me like 4 out of 5 times. So we'll try to find somebody new today in a great prize package. That comes up in just minutes. Plus, the judge, Phil Hauck, joins us. It's all coming up. Hour number 2 on the other side. It's the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.